This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey, good morning. Doug Sinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, all things legal. Give us a call at 260-1870 or text us on the Oakland Heart Talk and Text line at 260-1870. Good morning, Albert.
Hey, Doug, what's up?
Daylight savings time. We're all trying to adjust.
Yeah.
So
you know, it's been good for me. I'm an old man now, right? So I've been waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning. This is beautiful. Now I can wake up at 6. So it's perfect. For me, it's really an extra hour of sleep in my mind.
Yeah. This is maybe a lesson for Cullen, just so that, just give you some history, just given the fact that Cullen's almost 40 years younger than us back at the studio. But when they had daylight savings time, you used to have to manually change your clocks. And take your index finger and your thumb and start like manipulating it to roll back the time, as opposed to it just happens electronically now, which really was.
I walked around the house and changed about 6 clocks. We've got clocks hanging on the wall. We've got microwave clocks. We've got oven clocks.
They don't do that. That's right. The microwave doesn't do that, but I think most of the car clocks do that. And if you wasn't sure. There was a phone number you could call to get the time. Do you remember that? I think it was the Coca-Cola sponsored this.
I do remember that. Golly, I hadn't thought about that in a long time.
529-6111 was the number. And if you had to.
I wonder what happened if you'd call right now.
I know. I thought about that. I might try to call and see what happens, see if they still have it. But the other memory of daylight savings time is when I was an altar boy at St. Angela. You'd see people sort of scurrying in around the readings in the gospel, because I think they just got sort of, people you would normally not see come in late. Because there was always a group, as an altar boy, you'd see that come in right before the gospel and leave right after communion, to be okay with God. And so I knew those people because they were the same. But you would see some people who would typically were there early would come in late, and you could see they're a little disheveled because they're like, oh, this daylight savings time's messed us up here. So that was the other memory of daylight savings time. So hope everybody adjusts. And
the thing about daylight savings time is that, and the big push against keeping it the same, is that kids in the morning, especially in rural areas, if you move the clock forward, it stays darker another hour.
Right.
And so if you got to go catch a school bus or that sort of thing, then you may be standing there in the dark. And so I think they kind of adjusted those things for the kids, you know, and that had to be, like I said, standing there waiting for the school bus in the dark.
They used to do a life savings time, I think, in April. It was around Easter. And, and now they, I think they do it in March. And, you know, I remember around Halloween is when they would go from daylight savings times to standard time. So
yeah, it's a big push to do away with it all.
That's it. That's it. So
and keep it. And look, honestly, I like it where you know, you get home and you can go for a walk and you can go do whatever, and it's still light out. And so
I think that it keeps your options open. And
exactly.
You know, during Christmas, as you know, it's already dark at 5 o'clock, and you're like, what the heck?
Yeah.
You know, I was just saying, you can't go anywhere without seeing a Nikos offspring. And I'm coming back from vacation, and the seat behind us, we had another Nico nephew. Yes.
Do you remember which one this one was?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's your oldest sister's son.
My Anson.
And
yeah.
He said, he was saying, Albert was the cool uncle. Because he said that you and your older sister had 18 years between you.
Yeah, that, 17, but yeah.
And he said that, so that he was, you were closer in age to that particular cousin. And he said you were the cool cousin. Always had a pretty girl around, you know, just sort of doing, you know, just the cool cousin.
I still do.
I understand.
Still got my wife around.
That's right. It's he said he was, you know, always into something. So
I was young, yeah, the young single one. You know, they were all married. My closest sibling to me is 4 years older. So, and he got married younger. So they were married for quite a long time, and I stayed single till I was 30. So I was, they were always.
I do remember when you met Aaron.
Easily impressed.
What was it? Quesera, maybe. Is that right?
Aaron and I met at Quesera.
Yes.
Yeah, on a Wednesday afternoon. She drank me pretty, you know?
Yes.
Three for one.
That's right.
You know what I was thinking about the other day? Talking about the Jazz Fest lineup being announced, you know? And you and I, we were single. We were, I think, in law school.
Yes.
Maybe right. I think we were in law school. And we went to see, they used to have the evening concerts at the Municipal Auditorium.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah. And so we went to see Van Morrison. Yeah. I don't know if you remember that.
I remember. He was singing everything off his new album.
Yes. But I'm telling you, he didn't sing Brown Eyed Girl, Domino, Tupelo Honey, any song you've ever heard of Van Morrison singing, you know, unless you were like this, you know, this crazy rabid fan that knew all the offcuts. He sang none of them, the whole concert. And so Doug started like heckling him. Oh, he's a bum. Get him off the stage. Like he was a boxer or a baseball player or something. You know?
Hey, man.
And like, I'm killing myself laughing, but he was. It's like, who are you there for? I mean, sure, sprinkle in a new song or two, right? To give the people what they're there for.
Look, if you're a true musician, you say, look, if you need to go to the bathroom, go now because I'm starting to play some new songs off my new album. You know,
exactly.
Be about to sit, go to the bathroom. You know, if I'm gonna play two in a row, you can stay there a little while and get a little drink and come back. But, you know, it'd be like going to see Paul McCartney and playing everything off his new album and not playing anything. You'd be like, what the heck?
Exactly.
But yeah, that
where'd you go? Did you go skiing?
No, we went south. We went to Mexico, Cabo.
Oh, really? Because the nephew I'm thinking about, I think they went skiing. So
y'all were
still on the same plane. Okay.
We connected in Dallas, and he was right behind us, and he actually used to live down the street from us, and so he was talking about Albert. You know, he said you were athletic, you were cool, had pretty.
It was a long time ago.
Plural. all around. So yeah. You just got a pretty warm on right now for the last 40 years. It's been a
yeah. He was your neighbor, right?
Yeah, he was down the street from us.
Right.
So
right.
And all right. Not a lot of a little bit of sports. All right. The Saints have restructured Derek Carr. And what in essence happened is they took a guaranteed bonus, a guaranteed money for this year, and reclassified as a signing bonus. So basically, I think it gets classified as basically one-third this year, one-third 26, and one-third 27. So what you're doing, again, is kicking the can down the road. Now, I knew they had to get under the cap to become cap compliant. And so it's almost like, you know, getting another credit card to pay off your present credit card, and in layman's terms. And so,
but, well, honestly, though, that splits it over 3 years, because if they let him go, they got to pay it all now, and they can't.
Right.
So they've got to figure out a way to restructure. They restructured McCoy.
Right.
So, you know, and that's you know, listen, I'm a firm believer that Derek Carr is your best chance of winning right now. I think Rattler's still raw. You know, I'd love to give him some minutes, and who knows the health of Carr. Although he's, you know, with the exception of his broken wrist, he's played hurt. I mean, he had a separated shoulder. He played, didn't miss a game, you know, a year ago. So he's, you know, I think he's your best chance of winning. And obviously they do too. And so, hey, let's keep him around. And if we have to deal him, you know, we'll take a hit on the guaranteed money and let somebody else pick him up down the road who might have a quarterback that gets hurt and they just need an experienced person to step in.
But even if they trade him, they still take that cap hit.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House of the Home Theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
So I read in USA Today that the majority of people stop GLP-1 weight loss injection shots in a year. Now, what's concerning is if you get off GLP-1s, there's a real chance you can gain all the weight back. The solution? Alma said, a natural superfood protein shake. University studies show it optimizes your metabolism so you can lose weight easily, and Alma said it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Use Alma said with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at almased.com. That's almased.com.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. 5 times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like if
yeah.
they would,
yeah.
And so that's
one of the guarantees,
right? And that's just, you know, I hope that stops, because you want to clear cap at least 2027. And great organizations, you got organizations who play to be mediocre and just, you know, keep your job, and you have organizations that play for greatness. And sometimes what you have to do, though, is take your hits the first couple of years. Jimmy Johnson went 1-15 his first year at Dallas, only because
right.
he had to put in a long-term term program that was going to require the Cowboys taking a hit. You had the Pittsburgh Steelers with Chuck Knoll. I think they won 11 games in their first four seasons, something like that, before they sort of cleared things out and built for the future. So the question will be, is do you want to build yourself for mediocrity and win go between 7 and 10 games, or do you want to put yourself in a position for greatness? And sometimes when you put yourself in a position for greatness when you're in the Saints situation, is you're going to have to take a lot of short-term pain, and in this case, it would be the salary cap. And like Chuck Knoll, what he did was this. He said, I'm not going to have a bunch of veterans to make me mediocre. I'm going to take a bunch of young guys and mold them into the kind of player I want them to be, and then, you know, mold the type of team he did, rather than taking another 8-year veteran to come in. He sort of got his own way of doing things. He sort of in and out. You know, you don't have that foundation. So we'll see. I mean, I'm not. I wish they would take as much pain as they can in 2026. I mean, 2025.
Yeah, I mean, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've done, and they've had a history of doing. Honestly, since their first year was grabbing veterans beyond their years or at the end of their career. Mm-hmm. What was his name? Is it Brandon Brown, the defensive back? What was his name?
Yeah, Browning.
Browning, yeah. So they grabbed a few of those guys. You know, they've already done their deals in Buffalo. They were, you know, I'm a 9-year veteran. They went and paid them way too much money, signed them for 3 years. And, you know, look, I always say that the biggest obstacle to your next success is your last success, right? So here it is. Look, I've played my time out. I was an all-pro where I was. Got a couple years left in the tank, but I'm not going to kill it. I'm not going to work as hard as I did in my earlier years to make myself the great player I was, you know. And so I think you see a lot of that. And they continue to do that, you know, picking up the honey badger at the end of his career, picking up, you know, hanging on to players just a little too long that, you know, look, guys, it, you're costing us too much money. You know, you might have a year left. I'm not paying you big, big money for 3 years. We'll shop you, let somebody else do it. And then we're going to go, like you say, develop players. We're gonna grab a few more draft picks, and you know we might get lucky with one or two of them that can really help the team. And I think that's the strategy. You know, look at the Green Bay Packers. It has been their, you know, they've always had some of the lowest paid players because they pick up the vast majority of their players through the draft. And they work them and they develop them and they buy into the system. They don't have some other system that they've been, you know, gotten used to. They're going to come in and say, wait, change this, do this, do that. It seems to be, Belichick, same way. Mm-hmm. You know, I got my stars, right? I got guys you got to pay. But then beyond those handful of players, you know, everybody else, we're going to make you great. And look, when you get your ask for your big money, go get all the money you can get. We'll trade you in your prime, and we're going to go get 5 or 6 other players and develop maybe 1 or 2 when you're gone.
Cool. Yeah,
and that seems to me a better recipe for success than grabbing players on the back end of their career.
I remember this from 30 years ago, sort of peeking behind the curtain. When you meet a lot of the people making decisions, the decisions are as much based about them trying to keep a job in the short term as opposed to long-term success of the, you know, of the franchise. For example, I used to know a lot of the player personnel and the GM types. And what they would do is if they pick someone high who didn't work, they would hold on to them because they were reluctant to admit they made the mistake and just cut it loose early on rather than letting them go,
right?
Because that would be a reflection on them. And
exactly.
I think a lot of would, especially now, you know, I think when coaches used to get hired, they have 3 or 4 year plans. And now coaches get fired after 1 or 2 years that of not performing. Now, I think a lot of times if you perform like to your capability, but you win 5 or 6 games, I think an owner could see that versus performing underachieving, winning 5 or 6 games when you should win 7 or 8. It may be the same ultimate result, but it may have a different perception to it. But a lot of the decisions are made, which was sort of shocking to me, that is for short-term viability because I might not have a job next year, but it costs you long-term. And that short-term outlook usually was counterproductive to the long, you know, to the long term. So, you know, I just hope that, you know, it's okay to say, look, we're just going to take our hits this year. Let's just burn all that money, yeah, pay back all that cash, and have as much clear for 26 and 27 so that we can really make a move and shape this team like we are. Because if you have all this dead cap money that goes into 26 and 27, you're not going to be able to reshape your team to the extent you would, because you got to deal with paying off, you know, Jordan's contract, Derek Carr's contract, Honey Badger's contract, a bunch of people who aren't going to help you get to the next level. So
and that's what I'm saying. That's what I was saying. But right before he signed his last contract, you know, it is a business, right? Hey, what have you done for me lately? And you might be playing at a high level, but I know you're 32 years old now, and it's going to be a real difficult swing over the next 3 years to maintain that level of play. Thank you for all you've done, but go let somebody else buy that big salary before we sign you for this last little 3 year period. And thank you for what you've done, but it's time to move on. And that's what the Saints haven't done. And it's a shame. I mean, you know, there's a lot those guys can bring to the locker room in terms of leadership and all that sort of thing. But, you know, it you just got to cut them loose.
I think also, you know, when you run an organization by committee, you have a tendency to be more conservative and more risk averse. I do know when Sean Payton was coaching and he made a mistake, he wasn't afraid to admit it. I mean, if you're a second round pick and you didn't perform, I'm going to cut you. You know, if, you know, like Pierre, like Pierre Thomas, he was a free agent. They had a 4th round pick out of Ohio State who was a running back. He's like, this guy's not going to cut it. We're going to cut him and we're going to bring the free agent. And you know, have Pierre Thomas, you know, make team, which a lot of executives in the NFL won't do that. They would hold on to that 4th round pick because they're saying they're not going to admit that I made a mistake, or it'd be a reflection on them. And and that's, you know, that's sort of the, you know, behind the curtain as far as how those decisions are made. So I hope the decisions are made with the idea of becoming great in 27, 28, 29, rather than just being, you know, content with being mediocre. So we'll see. We'll see. All right, let's go take a break. Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, all things legal. We'll be right back after this brief timeout. We're back. Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyer, making the complex understandable. Got a few texts, and then we'll transition into law. Good morning. In your opinion, why does LSU team play a Power 5 team for their first game? They have lost their first 4 openers. Exposure, money, but it would be nice if they played like a Georgia Southern first and then played so that they wouldn't be caught off guard. But I think Brian Kelly is going to prepare him for this first game. And after you lose 4, the odds are you're going to win 1. So I think he's going to have him ready for the he's going to just redo things to get him ready. Also, do you think the Saints would sign Aaron Rodgers? Nope. I think he's somewhere else. And also, Albert, the time and temperature still exist in Lafayette. If you want to call and get the time and temperature, it's 337-235-5111. So
there you go.
There you go. So for daylight, so if you're confused on daylight savings times and you do not have electronics, that automatically convert to daylight savings time. That's your number.
Of course, it's a long distance phone call now since you're not using a cell phone to do it.
Yes. So it's
aggravating.
That's right. Well, whoever would call for that would probably call from a phone that's mounted to a wall that has a cord
right.
that's about 20 feet long. So mm-hmm. that would probably be long distance under that traditional structure of a phone call. You know, I guess to talk a little bit about this, like we get, you know, there's always, you know, different, I guess, trends that occur due to, you know, society, age, culture. And one of the things that's happening right now is we have a culture of baby boomers who are coming to age in their 70s and 80s, who post-World War II, who had maybe a little different view of money, had a different, more traditional. And what they would happen was, you know, they came, you know, their parents came out of depression. And a lot of the baby boomers have a real saving mentality. And, you know, we see a lot of estates where people made some, you know, nice money, but not, you know, generational changing money, but they saved it. And they built up a little nice little nest egg. Then you have the next generations, which are sort of our generation on down, which seem to be generally highly consumer oriented. Meaning sort of paycheck to paycheck, spend a lot of money. And we have in a lot of situations where, you know, maybe one of the children in our generation or below had some difficulties through life, and their parents who saved a lot are now, you know, elderly, need help, and they're getting and maybe some of the children who aren't such good children see this as an opportunity to deal with my lifelong financial problems by getting my hands on my parents' money before and after they die. And a lot of times we're starting to see more and more of people calling wanting to contest wills and saying, hey, you know, I have, you know, I got three, you know, siblings, and mom and dad gave everything to one sibling and not the others. I'd like to contest a will. And, you know, I just wanted to talk, Albert, you know, what are some of the reasons or two reasons that you can contest a will? And, you know, what is the standard for that?
Well, the simplest reason, so, you know, in the past you'd have to go probate the will, right? Probate is just a fancy word to go prove it up, go prove that that's truly the will of the testator or the person writing the will. Then years and years ago, they came up with a statutory formula, which it's a statutory will, and it is self-proving. So if the will is completely typewritten, it is signed on every page. There is a specific clause at the bottom that the witnesses sign, and it is notarized and witnessed by two witnesses and dated. It is a statutory will. It's in proper form. It is, you know, and it's an authentic act, which means it's a notary and two witnesses in Louisiana, and therefore it is self-proving. So now the burden of proof to establish that it is not the will of the testator then shifts to whoever may want to contest it. You don't have to go prove it up anymore. It's self-proving. And the biggest reason is capacity, right? That's the best way to establish that it's not, you know, of course, there could be some ambiguities in the will. Right. I leave 50% to this person and 70% to that person. And the court then just has to go fight it out to see what the testator's intent was in terms of trying to dispose of their property after their death. But for the most part, it is a capacity issue, whether or not the person whose will it is had the mental capacity to truly understand what he or she was doing when writing the will, you know, whether there was some sort of undue influence, you know, there's certain ways to challenge it. But like you say, you start with the presumption in a notarial or statutory will that it's legit. And so now you've got to overcome that presumption, and you're going to have to bring in evidence. And, you know, the best evidence, obviously, is the testator's treating physician, right? You'd have to try to go get some records from the treating physician to see if there's anything you might find in there that challenges the mental capacity of, you know, if there's some videos that maybe the heirs can come and bring to the court, you know, some scrambled text messages or just, you know, which, you know, these days, I don't know how effective that is, but we've certainly used them when witnesses come forward, right? Because it's convenient someday to say, mom, you know, mom's losing it as a, you know, and then it's on days when the will's in your favor, it's like, oh, mom, it was in perfect health. And so we've used that in the past where, you know, some of the witnesses who are now trying to prove that, you know, mom is okay, are saying to the sibling in a text, you know, she forgets everything. She doesn't know where she's going. We really need to put her in a home. You know, she needs help. She's got Alzheimer's. She's got dementia. She's got whatever. And so those things can be used as some sort of evidence when somebody's trying to come along and say that, that they have capacity. But that's the way to challenge it. And it's hard. It's a hard burden. It's hard to do. Especially if you get a third party position, to come in and try to review the records and make a decision without having seen the patient.
After the break, we'll talk about, you know, testators or testatrix who or, have dementia. And just because you have dementia doesn't necessarily mean the will would be invalid. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. Let's go to a break. Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, all things legal. We'll be right back after this brief time out. Hey, we're back. Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, all things legal. We're doing 70s rock today. So Cullen is like all over the music scene, but he's not so familiar with Bruce Springsteen, which he was huge, but he was sort of like, he wasn't mainstream. He wasn't like a top 40 all the time, but it's, you know, sort of, I don't know how you, not alternative, but.
I liked him back when he was a rocker.
Rocker, you know, not a political analyst. In fact, has he moved yet?
He's
supposed to go to Canada. No, he can't go to Canada because it's too expensive to live there now. They don't have any American goods coming in. So I guess he'll have to – can't go to Europe. It's dangerous there, you know. So I don't know. Let's know. He should stick to rock and roll and less political analysis.
They all should.
First of all, they don't have any – they're very little education, you know. I mean, they come from high school and they start playing, you know, a guitar or whatever. Yeah. And they're like – all of a sudden they're experts on politics and government and law and the Constitution. So anyway. But even though
– we went real quickly to the Eagles concert in the 90s. And in the Superdome, big concert, you know, big fan of the Eagles. And they take a little break and Don Henley gets up. And he starts talking about the TEDS, right, the total exclusion devices.
Oh, please.
And how every one of the shrimpers needs a TED so these little sea turtles can get out of their net. Well, meanwhile, they're losing about 40% of their catch because they got a big hole in their net. Well, he's up there, and he starts talking for about 2 minutes, and about 50% of the Superdome starts booing him. Like, you're talking to the wrong audience here, buddy. We love our shrimpers. So he shut up, you know, went back and started just playing his guitar like he should have been doing instead of, you know, giving his political opinion on turtle excluding devices.
You shouldn't unload your guilt to make yourself feel better on your audience that paid a bunch of money to come see you. But even though – even though Bruce is a horrible political analyst, I love his music. So,
me too. Yeah, a lot of them are that way. I love Eagles.
I mean, unlike the other way around, who don't like maybe certain people who have different ideas. Talking a little bit about wills. We often get a call that says, mom, dad did a will, uncle, aunt, whoever, and they had dementia. And they did some things I didn't like or didn't agree with. So therefore, since they had dementia, the will's invalid, isn't it correct? That's easy to prove. And not necessarily. And
They're lucid intervals that people have. I can sit down with and it's all an element of degree, right? We were talking to somebody last night, and she kind of lost her trend of thought, and she's older than us, and then we kind of laughed about it, and she said, yeah, I was going to tell you something, and that kind of thing happens, but she's perfectly lucid. She drives. She's fine, but she just has that little senior moment, so we call. And so as things progress, it's just the opposite. Where you kind of have lucid moments where you like you're very in the moment, and you have that that sense of place. You know what you want to do. I can tell you whenever I write a will, and I don't care if it's for a friend or family member or whatever. I will send the children, whoever brought me there, or whoever brought them there to my office, I'll send them out of the room if I somehow suspect that there's an issue. But I'll send them out of the room and I'll say, okay, do you know why you're here? And tell me what you want to do with your money. And tell me, and it gives that person the chance to explain to me, out of the presence of their child who may be trying to influence them, because look, quite often parents, I see it all the time, they don't want to be the source of any discontent. And subconsciously, whether they're trying to do this or not, they will just kind of ignore the issue or do whatever this particular child wants them to do and let the kids fight it out after I'm gone, because I don't want to be the source of they're arguing back and forth over what happens with mama's estate. So I will definitely send them out of the room, and I've confronted the child saying, look, I just talked to your dad or your mom, and this is what they want to do. And they didn't come back. So obviously that person was shopping it, right? And there's signs. There's signs of this undue influence that children, all of a sudden, this sibling who's maybe not as financially well off as the rest of the siblings decide they want to come home and take care of mama or daddy, the mama's signing checks and they're filling in the amounts and giving gifts away to that child, or giving gifts away to third parties. I had a couple of situations. One, the daughter moved in with mom in mom's house, and I'm going to take care of you, mom. Well, I'm going to take care of you means I don't have any place else to go. And so she moves in, the husband moves in, and then slowly she starts taking over mom's house, thinking the house is hers, getting rid of all the other siblings' stuff in the house. You can't see mom today. She's sleeping. She's not feeling well. She doesn't want you to come. Those kinds of things. Moving mom's phone away from her so she can't get up and get to it. All of these things, are telltale signs that, the sibling is trying to keep mom from, communicating with the other siblings, under the fear that she might tell him something that the child doesn't want him to hear, to establish this undue influence. So just, you know, be vigilant. And it's hard. Sometimes siblings live out of state. Sometimes they're busy, they're working, they're doing whatever, they're raising their maybe grandchildren. And it's hard to get involved. But, demand to see it. Demand to see it. And bring that to a head while mom or dad are still alive. You know, and if mom says, look, she's taking care of me, I want to leave her a bigger portion of this because she's here every day. Okay.
Yeah. Let's go to a break. Ducks and Terry, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers. We'll be right back. All right. We'll be back for hour number two in all things legal. Stay tuned for national news, local news. We'll be back in about 10 minutes in all things legal. We're on till 10 o'clock today, and we'll talk a little bit more about what we're talking about today as far as capacity for wills. So we'll see you in 10.